Our next speaker is no stranger to talking about wars. Cathy Newman is one of the lead presenters of Channel 4 News, which is, well, I would say the best news programme on the telly at the moment. And she has had lots of scoops, including all lots of seedy stuff that's happened in Westminster, as well as being the only journalist who travelled to the Congo to report on the sexual violence when Angelina Jolie was doing that. And Cathy is also, in her kind of spare time, has a wonderful series where she interviews women about how they got to where they've got to. And she's called this series and the subsequent book, The Ladder. So I'd like to start off, because just the fact that you call it The Ladder means we're still climbing.
Yeah, I mean, The Ladder, in a way, I'm sort of a bit tongue-in-cheek, because, as you'll know from reading the book, a lot of the women who I interview say, well, the best thing about a career ladder is not to think of it as a ladder, because actually it's not A to B and, you know, straight up the rung and you're toiling up to the top, because most successful women have had quite a circuitous route to the top. And I find that quite reassuring because, for example, Nisha Katona, who founded Mowgli Street Food, which is an amazing chain of restaurants, I absolutely love it. And she talked about how, you know, she was a bit of a disappointment to her parents because she didn't study what they wanted her to study. And then she ended up sort of trying to be a barrister, but it wasn't really for her. And then she sort of hit on the fact that it was food and, you know, being an entrepreneur that got her going. And so she set up Mowgli Street Food, and now she's an incredibly successful entrepreneur and restaurateur. So I just found that very reassuring that actually it's about sort of just like enjoying what you're doing and getting immersed in what you're doing. And, you know, hopefully if you're passionate about something and you love what you're doing, then you'll be better at it. And so you'll progress up the ladder without even thinking of it as a ladder. But I suppose your point is the ladder easier for men than it is for women? And I suppose that's what I'm alluding to in the subtitle about dodging the snakes, because, I think there are more snakes who are going to tip you off your perch for a woman than there are for men. And I think that's still the case. And particularly if you're a woman of colour, you know, there are more hurdles you've got to, sorry, I'm mixing my metaphors now, but more hurdles you've got to surmount on your way up the ladder. And I think that is still the case.
Yes. And I mean, I would say also that the whole issue of having children is, I don't want to call it a snake, but it's without a doubt a very big break in the ladder, and one that, as a society, I think we're not very good at dealing with.
Yeah, and, you know, the pram in the hall was always seen as the kind of impediment to literary success. Well, it can be an impediment to female success. But I think that was interested me as well, because from my own personal experience, you know, I've got a very supportive husband, and, you know, I absolutely couldn't do what I do without his support. And I found it interesting that a great many women in the book, like Brenda Hale, for example, she credits her husband for helping her propel her up the ladder. And I always think the first Women's Lib conference, the men did the childcare. And I love that, you know, because I think that you've got to be a team and you've got to have male allies. And that male ally might be your husband in my case, or it may be, and also in my case, you know, many people at work who, you know, are male supporters of propelling women up to the top. And I think that's crucial.
And I mean, I started Spare Rib magazine, which is now, I have to say, 51 years old. It's a very long time. And by the way,
you were in my first book.
That's right.
As a bloody brilliant woman.
But there's a line in your book, you know, about how you write in your, and I'm going to quote it, but you take it for granted, women take it for granted that they can be judges, doctors, and lawyers and anything they want. Now, I mean, 50 years ago, you couldn't take any of that for granted. So we have gone a long way up the ladder. But I also think that in a way that now women can be all sorts of things, we never really redefined what men could be. And I think that's been a very big problem.
I think that's really interesting. And I think I end the book with Mary Beard being very optimistic, and actually, you wouldn't necessarily expect her to be optimistic given, you know, all the trolling she's had online and so on. And I do talk about that in the book as well, that, you know, that is a challenge that, you know, a lot of women have, and girls particularly, you know, our daughters, our granddaughters, you know, have today, that we didn't have, and that is that horrible social media world that they've got to navigate, and a lot of the hurdles that previous generations of women faced in real life, they're now facing online, subsequent generations. But yeah, redefine what a man is. I think that's a really interesting point, and I think that comes back also to, I do a lot of talks at schools, and I go in to talk to boys and girls, and I think that young boys are struggling with a lack of male role models. And I think we have brilliant young girls have amazing female role models now, which is another reason for optimism that Mary Beard would cite, I'm sure. But I think there is an issue with male identity, male role models, and yeah, as you say, how what where is the man in this space? And I think it's also I thought about this a lot with my job and interviewing and so on. And when I first became a presenter, I kind of thought I had to do it like the men do it. And, that was very aggressive interviewing and, really sort of pugnacious Jeremy Paxman style, because that's kind of what I grew up with. But then I realized that actually that wasn't always what people wanted these days. They want a variety of presenting styles. And actually, they quite like it if, as a woman, you're able to tease something more out of someone by being a bit less adversarial. So that I think could be maybe the definition of what men and women do is much more fluid now and much more subtle than it has been in the past, and much less sort of binary. I'm not getting into gender politics and that, but just, just a little more shades of grey than we've had in the past.
I think that's really interesting. I mean, one of the things that I thought was fascinating and a bit depressing about the whole COVID inquiry was the idea that the people who were formulating the lockdown rules were young men who'd been to Eton and who had no children, who were just sitting around thinking that they could just say, well, shut the schools without thinking of, what that actually meant to a mother who was going to be the one who picked up the slack. And do you think that, you can't, you need, do you think we're at tipping points where there's enough feminine emotional intelligence that's around to make these kinds of differences?
Well, I think, and also Helen McNamara, who was a senior civil servant, made the point to the inquiry that no one thought about what would happen to domestic violence and rates of domestic violence if you basically kept people at home. And obviously, we know tragically that the results were that more women got beaten up at home. And that was because, as you say, there were too many old Etonians, but also just too many men making the decisions. And I think we're at a tipping point in certain industries, but I think politics is actually getting more problematic because this is also again partly because of social media, that a lot of women now, bright women, don't want to go into politics because it's just too toxic. And why would you? If you can make a good living, you've basically got to do it for love and a sense of duty, which some people have, and that's brilliant. But actually the kind of tax on your own personal well-being, but also your well-being of your family. We've seen, I know it's, Tobias Elwood has got targeted recently at his home, and he's a man, and so men do in politics, it's pretty hostile terrain for them too, but it's even more hostile for women. And whatever you think of her politics, it is a fact that Diane Abbott was kind of trolled a zillion times more than anybody else in the quite the most appalling way, because she was black and she was a woman. So, I think that is a real issue that we're grappling with, and politicians are trying to deal with social media by regulating it. And, the tech giants are kind of waking up to the fact that parents of murdered children and, children who have taken their own lives are, the genie has been let out of the bottle in a way that is having massive implications for society, but for politics, and also for women's participation in the democratic process, which is, yeah, I mean, I don't know what the answer is to that, but it's a massive issue that we're confronting at the moment.
Yes, and you think of how people like, well, both Angela Rayner and Jess Phillips, and those people who I think are amazing role models for women. And but then you also think, if your daughter said, "I want to go and be a female MP at the moment," you'd be thinking, really? Especially if they want to have children. It's very, very scary that. And I'm not quite sure at the moment how we fix it. Rather, if you can't get masses of women in to tip that balance.
I think you can only fix it when we've dealt with the problem of social media, AI, the tech giants not taking control of what is on their platforms. And we're pretty tightly regulated as broadcasters, and sometimes that can be quite challenging if you want to put out a story about someone who doesn't particularly want you to say various things about them, which may well be true, but they could take you to court and bog you down for years in court. That's another issue we're not getting onto right now, slaps,
No.
for example. But until the tech giants can sort of assume some of the same responsibilities that we have to have as broadcasters, I don't think you're going to make the world a sort of more benign place for women to participate in politics, for example. It's a sort of unforeseen consequence of letting that social media giant out of the bottle, the genie out of the bottle.
So who's really inspired you in your life? I mean, I know from my point of view, when I was young and I was doing Spare Rip, and someone said, you should go and talk to Martha Gellhorn. And I thought, oh my God, how amazing. And they said, oh, she'll write for Spare Rib. And I remember going round and being completely in awe. I was very young. And I said, would you write for it? And Martha said, I'd never write for anything that's women's liberation. I mean, I do it on my own.
Wow.
And I
Oh,
was,
that's crushing.
I know. I mean, we did subsequently become great friends for the rest of our life, but it was such an extraordinary moment of, because everything about feminism then was about sort of sisterhood. And I think that does still exist, but I think it's incredibly important, the feeling of, what you do in your podcast as well as in this book is lay open other people's lives and the difficulties, the triumphs that they've had.
What I love about it is that I think there is a much better sense of sisterhood now. And I pay tribute to pioneers such as yourself, because it wasn't it was it's much easier for subsequent generations. And even when I started work, there was that thing of like the women who were at the top didn't necessarily want to send the elevator back down, as the saying goes. Now, I think there's really very much a culture of women helping each other. And I mentor lots of young women, and I think that's really important. And I think there is that sense of a much more of a network, because we've seen the men having the networks, and we think, right, we'll do that because there's a power in a network. But who's inspired me? I mean, I know this sounds corny, but I am inspired by every single woman I interview on this thing, because Anne Oliveris, to name one, pioneering feminist lawyer, she talked about it, sends shivers down my spine even when I think about it. She talked about how her mum was constantly abused by her father. And when she was still a teenager, one time her father went to hit her mum again. And she, as a teenager, basically stood between them and said, don't hit her, hit me. And when you do, I'm going to call the police and I'm going to press charges. And he didn't hit her. And that was the last time that he hit her mum. And I just think how incredible and how inspiring that someone who was that teenager then went on to, be such a pioneer and a trailblazer. And I could give you any number of examples. The same, Tawakkol Karman, who's an incredible activist, who's, we've been talking a lot about Alexei Navalny recently. I mean, she is sort of the equivalent in terms of a female activist and campaigner. And just the number of times she's been put in jail and risked jail simply to protest for the freedoms that we all take for granted. So, yeah, I mean, Rosamunda Duquesne Deborah, another woman I've interviewed for the book, turned, incredible tragedy of her child Ella being killed, and how she died of an asthma attack, and how she then turned that tragedy into ensuring that air pollution was put as cause of death on her certificate, and she's now become a global campaigner against air pollution. And she's got Arnie Schwarzenegger sort of ringing her up and sort of giving her help and campaign tips and asking her for campaign tips. So, I have so many inspirational women that I speak to every week. It's a real privilege to do it.
Well, thank you very much for sharing that. And there are lots of amazing women in Kathy's book that are really great to read about. And we do need role models, especially nowadays, to help us forward. And I completely agree with you about Rosamund. She is amazing, and she really has changed laws and changed the way that the world thinks about this unseeing poison that hangs all around us. And it's very, very impressive. It's simply awful that it took such a tragedy to make that
Yeah.
happen. But my God, I do admire her courage. And thank you so much for finding the time to do this terrific book for all of us and for
Thank you.
anyone whose daughter needs a thought or any age, go and get it. So thank you, Kathy. That was
Thank
absolutely
you.
great.